Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. During Mitt Romney's campaign for president in 2012, BYU professor Randy Bott was interviewed by a Washington Post reporter to explain the LDS Church's teachings on race. It didn't turn out well. It turns out a misunderstanding because of the church's silence on the issue led to a lot of bad public relations. In our next conversation with Dr. Matt Harris and Dr. Newell Bringhurst, we'll talk about the Randy Bott incident and why the church's silence isn't always a good thing when dealing with sensitive subjects. Check out our conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say a classic example of the persistence of stereotypical, Latter-day Saint racist teachings would be the whole Randy Bott.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking the same thing.
This situation, as late as 2012, you got this highly regarded, I guess he was really, really considered as one of the best, most effective, most popular professors down at BYU. And he's going with these racist tropes. And this is 2012.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, did that play a role in the race essay?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there might be people out there that don't know what we're talking about when we talk about Randy Bott. Newell, I'll let you. Can you tell us about Randy Bott? What was that episode all about and how it related to Mitt Romney?
Well, he was interviewed, wasn't it? Was it a New York Times? Or it was one of the large Eastern newspapers. And he was interviewed concerning, kind of went back to the classic LDS arguments about how blacks had been cursed and with a dark skin, and the curse had been lifted, and it was almost like he was referring to his old lecture notes that he'd probably used in his religion classes, kind of frank and forthright. I mean, you kind of feel sorry for the guy, because what that did is it really pushed the church into issuing a couple of statements denouncing what he had said on the racist tropes, and then issuing a subsequent statement. I think Matt, you're probably more familiar with the exact contents of those two official statements issued by the church. And it was in the midst of Mitt Romney's campaign for the presidency, unlike today when Mitt Romney was trying to present himself as a more enlightened Republican candidate and not a racist bigot, unlike what's going on now. But so the church was really in this very difficult position. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit more, Matt.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the context is really important, Newell. So the church is on high alert over two issues during the Mitt Romney campaign. One is polygamy and one is the race. These are two issues that they had been rehearsing about. They had been talking about how to deal with it to the media when these inevitable questions would come about polygamy and race. So anyway, Randy Bott is well-respected BYU professor. Made a fateful mistake in the spring of 2012 when he opened up his door to entertain a Washington Post reporter named Jason Horowitz. And I interviewed with Horowitz, actually, and I said...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have him on record. I quote him in my next book.
Oh, nice.
So I said to Horowitz, I said, tell me how did you come across Bott? And he said, well, I just went to BYU. And I didn't have an appointment. He probably should have let the administration know that he was coming, because, this is a high-profile campaign, right? And a BYU graduate, a high-profile Mormon person, Mitt Romney. Anyway, so Horowitz didn't do that. He just went to the religion building and started knocking on doors.
No way.
There's a policy at BYU that you're supposed to go through this protocol to talk to people about certain high profile issues. This certainly would have been one of them, right? A Washington Post reporter. This wasn't from the Provo Daily Herald. This is the Washington Post. So anyway, he knocks on a door. one of the professors opens up the door. I'm Jason Horowitz, Washington Post. Can I interview you about Mitt Romney? Just want some stuff about Mitt Romney. Oh, I can't talk to you because you didn't go through the protocols. Okay, knocks on another door. He went through a handful of these, this door knocking when they just said, no, we can't talk to you. Randy Bott says, sure, come on in. And so keep in mind, it wasn't a gotcha story. It wasn't like, oh, I heard Mormons have some weird things to say about race. Let me try to get them on record, embarrass their candidate. It wasn't that at all. It wasn't that at all. Horowitz flew to Provo because he wanted to do a story on Mitt Romney, right? That's all it was. And anyway, so he told them, we're just going to do a story on Mitt Romney. And Bott said, okay, fine. And he said, okay, I want to ask you about, you know, his faith, his all of that. And so the first part of the story that Horowitz told me, he said it was pretty normal. We were just talking about Mitt Romney and the Mormon faith and what Mormons believe and all of this stuff. And then Randy Bott starts talking about race and how black people could not hold the priesthood. It would be like giving keys to a child to drive a car. They weren't ready. I mean, it was so humiliating. And I asked Horowitz, I said, what did you think when he started telling you about black people being cursed and comparing their inability to hold the priesthood to a child driving a car? And what did that, what? He just said, oh, I knew there was a story. I want people to know he did not go there trying to do gotcha on Mitt Romney. This just came out organically in the interview. And so he's a good reporter. He taped the whole thing. And so the story came out, and of course Randy Bott said he was misquoted. And I said to Horowitz, did you misquote him? He said, you know, I've been following this from a distance. So Horowitz lived in Washington, D.C. at the time. He said, I've been following this from a distance. And I know that when I published this story, there was a tremendous fallout on him. I knew that he had to leave BYU. I want you to know, Matt, I don't want to pile on him. And I said to Horowitz, I said, I don't either. So I'm not interested in doing that. I said, but he said that you're misquoted. The Utah newspapers interviewed him and his son too. And they all said that you misquoted him. And Horowitz said, I want to reiterate that I don't want to cause him more anguish, but I did not misquote him. I checked and rechecked the tape. He said what he said, and I wrote what I wrote. So, and that the other thing that's important is that Bott had been saying something very similar leading up to that. He posted something on his webpage, something very similar about blacks and cursings and all of this stuff. And I actually got a screenshot of it. Somebody had called this out to me. So he took it down after the post story broke, but I have a screenshot of it. And it was pretty consistent. So anyway, he got caught saying something that he shouldn't have said. And what's really interesting about this is, and this is why I think that it's really, context is so crucial here, is that in 2012, the church hadn't given an authoritative statement to say that it was wrong to teach that black people were cursed or less valiant. That was 2012. The Race and Priesthood essay was still a year and a half out. And so, you know, once in a while you had Elder Oaks, I think, and Neil Maxwell in 1988, they made a comment to the AP, Associated Press, saying, I wish we wouldn't teach some things. But this is just two apostles speaking in private. They had never, ever, the church at that point had not put out a statement saying that, you know, the church no longer believes that black people are cursed. So Randy Bott thought he was just teaching the church line. And obviously, I'm sure it caused Brother Bott some tremendous anguish to know that he was teaching something that was heretical. Because the next day after the post story ran, as Newell referenced, the church had produced two public relations statements. And even in one statement, they called him by name, a BYU professor. They singled him out. And so they clearly made an example of him in the midst of this very high-profile Mitt Romney campaign. So the poor guy thought he was just teaching the church line when in reality the church was trying to move in a different direction. but had somehow not communicated that to BYU religion faculty.
Well, and I do know some people point to President Hinckley's statement that says anybody who preaches racism is wrong. And I'm paraphrasing pretty badly there. And so some people will point to that and say, well, look what Hinckley said. But I don't think Randy Bott thought that what he was talking about, the curse of Cain, was a racist idea. I mean, is that true? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I interviewed, or I talked to one of Bott's colleagues just in and around when that happened, and he said something interesting. He said they were shocked at how the church treated Randy Bott, and he said, quote, this colleague said, quote, we all taught what Randy taught. We had no idea the church's position had changed. This is 2012. And so if you talk to Randy Bott or any of these other folks, they don't think it's racist, right? This is God. This is how God wanted it to
be.
This
is scripture, right?
This is how prophets had read the scriptures, right? And so that's not racist. And then when the church issues these two statements saying that what Bott said was is racist, I mean, that really just caught folks off guard. And so there is no question in my mind, it wasn't coincidental that a short time later, the Race and Priesthood essay comes out, which it very clearly states that curses and less valiance and all of that stuff is no longer the church teaching. And it's not okay to teach this stuff. And it's just too bad that Bott didn't have this before he gave this interview, because he wouldn't have got into the trouble that he did. And I remember talking to a religion professor, another colleague of his. He said that Bott went rogue. And I looked at him and I said, you know, that doesn't pass the smell test. Do you really think for a moment that a BYU religion professor would go rogue during a high-profile presidential campaign? Do you really think that? And then he reconsidered his position. He didn't go rogue. He just didn't know what he was saying.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you're more versed on this period, because it's going to be, you're going to be dealing with it in your book. But it's interesting that, you know, it's not just Randy Bott, but it's the whole religion department, that they would be so uninformed, you know, where the church stands on the race issue. We're talking 2012, when there's been other things that have been written that have, you know, the church is gradually moving away from that, you know, starting with, I think, the essay that was written for the official church encyclopedia, where they, you know, on various writings that and statements and everything else, and you know, even Hinckley, who, you know, I mean, that they would still, that the religion department would be insulated from or unaware of the direction in which the church is moving on the issue of race. Being at such an explosive issue, it's hard to believe that the whole religion department would be that naive. I mean, you could see if it was one person, Randy Bott, because he's a little bit clueless. He's maybe hasn't updated his notes or whatever. But when you're talking about the whole religion department, I find that both unbelievable and incredible. I don't know. Do you have why they would be so insulated or isolated from the direction in which the church is moving on the race issue?
I think there's a point, and a really important point to be made here, Noel. And I don't know, five years ago, I gave a paper at a conference, and I quoted Bott's colleague to the conference. And I want to keep his name out. His name's not important. But I will tell you that he was probably, I don't know, I'm guessing maybe 10 years younger than Bott. So he was up there in age. He'd been teaching at BYU for a long time. And so I quoted at the conference, I said that we all taught what Randy taught. That's what his colleague told me. And after it was over, I had two women approach the podium. They introduced themselves. They were younger. They were probably in their 30s, I would say. Early 30s, maybe. They were pretty young women. Anyway, and they identified themselves as the wives of BYU professors, religion professors. And they said, we just want you to know that our husbands teach at BYU in the religion department, and they don't believe what he taught. So they were really pushing back on this idea that we all taught what Randy taught. And I told these two women, I said, I believe you. I think it's a generational thing. I don't think that the new faculty at BYU are teaching that black people are cursed and less valiant. I don't believe that. And I'm glad that you're sharing this with me, because I don't believe it, and you're just confirming what I already believe. Since I know some of these folks, and I know that I wouldn't be teaching this. And so it's a generational thing that, I'm not even saying that all of the older faculty taught this, but it certainly is a generational thing. And I don't think, Newell, that they were as sensitive to the changing winds in the church, that they just couldn't see the writing on the wall that if I speak to a Washington Post reporter and tell them about some of our racial teachings, that this was going to really cause a problem for Mitt Romney and the church. I don't think it crossed his mind. And I think that, you know, when I'd be curious to know how Randy Bott learned that what he said was controversial. Because when he was talking to Jason Horowitz, he was comfortable, he was fluent, he had no idea that this was going to be a firestorm the next day. And I don't know if his, you know, some of his children or friends, they read social media and they said, uh-oh, you're in trouble. Or maybe it was the church's two PR statements that just threw him under the bus. I don't know. But clearly he learned about it. And that's when he went into damage control mode saying, I was misquoted. And I just said a minute ago that wasn't the case because he'd already said something on his website. He'd already said something similar to CES training sessions in years past. And then lastly, of course, Horowitz had the entire interview taped. So the guy just didn't understand that the church was moving in a different direction, but he didn't have anything authoritative to teach him that the church was changing.
Well, let me ask you, Matt, how much blame do church leaders say? I know, you know, that people like in the Genesis group and people, there was even that hoax apology a few years ago where somebody made a fake apology. How much of the blame is the church leaders just saying, you know what, we're just not going to talk about this anymore, and it will just go away by itself? And so church leaders like Randy Bott just go along thinking, well, this is what Bruce R. McConkie taught. I'm in line with Bruce R. McConkie. How much blame do church leaders get for purposely avoiding the issue and not making a public statement?
Well, I think that, you know, I was kind of angry I was upset a little bit when Bott's, one of his other colleagues, told me that he went rogue. And I thought, imagine this, I'm defending Randy Bott. He didn't go rogue. He was just teaching what the church had always taught, what Bruce McConkie, what other leaders had taught. And so the church had really done him a disservice by not being more frank about its racial past. And I always share this with in public spaces or when it's appropriate, I just say there's nothing wrong with saying, look, we taught some things about people of color that we would no longer ever teach today. Clearly, we were influenced by our times, and I'm so sorry that some of my predecessors in church leadership had taught this, but the important thing is this is not what the church teaches today. We're moving forward. And the problem is the church hasn't done that.
Even with the essay, right? Because it's still pretty vague.
No apology. And somebody said the other day in the Salt Lake Tribune, there's an article about something, about race, I think, and they said something about an apology and with the Mountain Meadows Massacre. And I said, there was no apology with Mountain Meadows Massacre. What they said was, we regret that it happened, because expressing regret and apologizing are two different things. And one of my friends who works for the church said that it was Elder Oaks who purposely didn't want to apologize because somehow there'd be some legal ramification if you express apology for something as horrific as this massacre.
Elder Oaks isn't he's pretty emphatic. He says the church never apologizes. I think that's in one of the things you've written recently. The church never apologizes for anything.
Doesn't seek them and doesn't give them.
I kind of, you know, as I say, I find Oates kind of a fascinating character because, you know, he's such an absolutist hardliner. It'll be interesting to see, you know, when he takes over with Nelson, if he's going to continue to push it in a, you know, in that, you know, interesting. I see President Nelson having a softer approach, whereas Oates, he just seems like almost like a, you know, another Boyd K. Packer type, just very rigid and very absolutist in those kinds of statements. I mean, and it seems like as he's gotten older, you know, I wonder if it's a possibility of just the aging process becoming more inflexible and more rigid. And, you know, and that would be an example. I maybe it's a product of his legalistic mind being the you know, somehow you don't back down.
I think it's, I think back to Richard Bushman, I think that if you apologize for one thing, then you've got to apologize for other things. And I think that the brethren, they're just really, really careful not to throw their predecessors under a bus. They don't want to start.
Oh, well, they did it with Brigham Young. They,
well, that's true. That's true. They threw Brother Brigham.
You're talking about blaming the race on Brigham? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Brigham Young. It's all Brigham Young's racism. It's not the church's racism. It's the racism Brigham Young mouthed from the time in which he lived. That's pretty much the bottom line on how they explain the race issue. And it's in that new book, Saints. You know, that's how they almost, you know, kind of repeat what's in the Gospel Topics essay. It's all Brigham Young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they, I think that started, Noel, when John Turner gained access to the Brigham Young papers. He's really the first scholar, other than Leonard Arrington, to have access to those papers and to utilize them in a project that culminates in a biography.
Thoroughly, yeah.
And I think that, I don't think that, you know, and that had to have approval at the very top. Two or three apostles signed off on that.
Well, doesn't that also go back to Lester Bush? Because previous, everybody was blaming it on Joseph Smith, and Bush was the one that says, no, we had some people that had the priesthood before Brigham. And so Bush kind of put it on Brigham, and it seems like the church has adopted Lester Bush's position now. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it goes, Bush was the first one to do it. Yeah, that was his great contribution, was that he exonerated Joseph Smith from actually starting the ban and said it was started under Brigham Young. And that was, you know, and that refuted what Taggart, Stephen Taggart, had written previously, and it was also the theory, the so-called Missouri thesis, which had also been initially propounded by Vaughn Brody in No Man Knows My History.
Well, I know we talked about that in a previous issue, both with you, Newell, and with Matt. We've talked about Taggart, I know. So
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Matt Harris and Dr. Newell Bringhurst. In our final conversation with Matt and Newell, they will share some of their thoughts on Armand Moss, who wrote the conclusion of the Gospel Topics series book. Unfortunately, Armand passed away in August and wasn't able to see the completion of the book, but they both give their thoughts on him. And oh, by the way, it's only going to be available to newsletter subscribers. So if you want to hear the final conversation, subscribe to our newsletter at gospeltangents.com/newsletter. And this is some of the things that you'll see.
Just, I'd say one thing about Armand the person, though, is that I think that there isn't probably anybody in the church, in my opinion, who represents a honesty and truthfulness, but yet from a believing Latter-day Saint as Armand. He really has walked that balance his entire life. He's not afraid of the truth. He's not afraid to let the chips fall where they may.
For those of you who are interested in the entire interview uncut without any interruptions, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview for just $5 a month. Also, we have other tiers. If you'd like to subscribe on our website at gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button and you can subscribe for $10. You can also do that on Patreon.
and get a PDF transcript. We've also got some other ones for $15 and $20 if you'd like to get those as well. If you're interested in individual transcripts, go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see our past interviews there in paperback form. So just check out Gospel Tangents. We're always updating those. For the latest updates on Facebook, go to Facebook.com/Gospel Tangents and you can see our latest updates there. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.